TFM.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, I notice you've got like 10 big boxes that you're carrying today. What is inside there?
Well, Chris, this is just my boxes of memorabilia having to do with my favorite episodes, or should I say what I think arguably the best episodes of Deep Space Nine. So
let me get this straight. You collect things related to specific episodes and then store them in boxes.
Oh, of course. I mean, who doesn't? You don't do that, Chris? Like,
you are a dedicated Niner. I guess you're leasing space in the cargo bay alongside Quark's contraband for that stuff, right? Very good. Well, today, everyone, we are going to do what we talked about on a recent episode and pick the 10 best episodes of DS9 as we feel they are the best. It's a very subjective thing to do. So it's going to be interesting to see where we agree, where we disagree. Matthew, you and I, we've made these lists independently. We've not shown them to each other. We don't know what's on each list. So let's see what happens. We're going to start with number 10 and then go to number 1, if you consider number 1 to be the best. So why don't you kick us off, Matthew, with your number 10?
Sure. I went with fan favorite and one of my all-time favorites of Trials and Tribulations.
All right.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, this was one of the most special episodes of any Star Trek series. You know, obviously they were celebrating a huge anniversary that year, and both Deep Space Nine and Voyager did special episodes to do that. And Trials and Tribulations was such a fantastic episode, and mainly too because, you know, they were using the same type of technology that we had seen only in feature films, using the Forrest Gump type of technology to insert our Deep Space Nine actors into an episode of TOS. And then, of course, the painstaking recreation of things like the original Enterprise and the station there, the K-7 station, which, you know, all of that was just so wonderfully and brilliantly created. And it's so lovingly done. And it's just, it is an episode, and it's, you know, I think every series has those episodes where you can just legitimately pull out that episode and watch anytime, regardless of if you've been doing a rewatch or not. And this is definitely one of those episodes of Deep Space Nine, for sure.
Definitely. I'm picturing your box of memorabilia for this episode. Is there any Quadro Triticale in there, or have all the Tribbles eaten it already?
Well, there's just of course, a lot of different action figures with Dax in the, you know, original outfit, of course, with, you know, the tricorder with the leather finishes and 23rd century technology. Just can't get enough of it.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a good pick. I considered this one for my list, although I didn't choose it. And one reason I didn't choose it is mainly that it doesn't play into the Deep Space Nine story arc or the mythos as much as the others. But as someone who grew up watching the original series, it's an episode that I truly love. And speaking of the Forrest Gump technology, They should have had, when Sisko meets Kirk, he should have said, I have to pee.
Definitely could have done that, for sure. You know, I think one of the things that also, you mentioned, you know, doesn't play into the larger story, but for me, I think that was one of the things where it is a section of Deep Space Nine and an episode of Deep Space Nine that doesn't require you having to have seen all of the episodes, really, to, I think, enjoy it. I think it's an episode you could show to just about anybody.
Yeah, definitely.
To try and get them into Star Trek.
Yeah.
And part of that, too, is because of the way that I think it pays such loving homage to what had come before. And so, yeah, it's such a great episode.
Now, that last point is one reason I was strongly considering it, because where TNG tried so hard to stay away from TOS and chart its own territory, mm-hmm. one of the great things about DS9 is that the writers acknowledged the original series and made it such a part of
yep.
the series, usually in small ways, but here they went all out. And for me, by far, this and Flashback, which was the Voyager anniversary episode that came out at the same time, this one definitely I felt was far superior, although I enjoyed Flashback as well.
100% agree. Yeah.
Okay. Well, the number 10 on my list, it's actually two episodes. It's Homefront and Paradise Lost.
Good choice.
And the reason I chose this one is it was always one of my favorite DS9 stories. And it has that nice blend of the familiar Star Trek from the Next Generation mm-hmm. and DS9 because of the setting.
Yep.
I always like it when they come back to Earth as well, because it's nice to see Earth mm-hmm. during that time period a little bit. And another big reason is that I feel that this is a strong case of DS9 writing a story at this point, almost 30 years ago, where the message of the story, the warning of the story, is so relevant today, maybe more so mm-hmm. than it was when yep. they wrote it.
Yeah. No, I couldn't agree with you more. This is not on my list, but it's one of those things where I debated putting them on the list. And like you said, I think it's one of the things to which we'll probably mention quite a few times in this episode, I think, is the fact that so many of the episodes to which are probably on our list are ones to which still have relevance today thematically, and most likely have more relevance than they did when they first came out. And that's the hallmark, I think, of one of the reasons why we like this show so much and why we continue to podcast about it and why we continue to watch it, because you can watch those episodes and still feel like you're pulling something out that's important. And, you know, that's just good storytelling. So, yeah, that's such a great pick for the list, Chris. And it was definitely a struggle for me to not put it on the list, honestly.
Yeah. So what's number 9 on your list?
For me, it's actually What You Leave Behind.
Okay.
And I put this on the list because it was something that I love the way the series ends. And I think one of the things that I like so much about the final episode is the fact that it's melancholy, which fits Deep Space Nine as a series. But it still ends hopefully, which I think is really beautiful too. You know, you have something that, you know, had never happened before, which is you have Sisko. We all kind of put the Star Trek captains up almost as godlike figures, and we finally have the captain becoming one, basically, in the Star Trek universe, which is just kind of a phenomenal thing. And it brings to a close so well the journeys of all the characters that we had had. So, you know, Deep Space Nine, unfortunately, was never really going to get films. And so even though that wasn't going to happen, you felt like you could picture in your mind where all the characters were going to go. And in many ways, too, all the characters get happy endings for the most part. You know, again, there's that melancholy bit with not knowing exactly when Sisko will be back, but to have Ezri and Bashir together, to have O'Brien moving forward and, you know, feel like in many ways by him going to Starfleet Academy, his wife is probably going to be happier. They'll have an even better relationship because, you know, she'll have more to do as a botanist. To see Kira in command, you know, of that. And the relationship that in many ways, you know, Jake is a grown man. And yet he kind of, I think, looks to her almost as a motherly type figure.
Or
maybe an older sister. There's just, I just love it. You know, I could sit here and probably talk all night about it. But yeah, that's what I picked as number nine. What about you, Chris?
Well, before we go to number nine on my list, I'll have to say that I also picked What You Leave Behind. And after a lot of debate,
nice.
I actually put it first on my list. And the reason is a lot of what you just described. The thing about it is, and that's why it's so difficult to list episodes 10 to 1 and say one is the best because it's so subjective.
Sure.
And I should say, with my list, this changes all the time. So this isn't set in stone, my like top 10, you know?
That's true. And, yeah.
So anyone listening, you know, if you ask me tomorrow, I might change the order of things. But the thing about this episode is that it's not an episode you can show someone unless they've watched the entire series, because it won't make any sense. But the reason that I put it number one today is that I think that it so perfectly sums up the entire series, all of DS9, and the way that the characters move forward. I started to say leave the show, but one thing I like about it is that it's open-ended. There is no nice bow tied on the DS9 story. You have people going their separate ways. You have people. Yeah. That final scene of Jake staring out the window just sums up so much about the entire journey that we all went on. And it has the wonderful light moments, too. You know, the scene with Vic, it always gets me emotionally, where they're all together for kind of the last time. And it gives us the culmination of the Dominion War. So I think there's just so much packed in there. And it really connects with what I love about DS9.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. No, 100%. And I can totally understand why it would be on somebody's list at the beginning. You know, it's just, it is really good. And So
so number nine on my list is Waltz, because it's another one of those episodes that's very much like a stage play, and everyone talks about Duet coming there right at the end of season one, next to last episode. But Waltz is similar, and I used to always actually get these mixed up in my head because of the titles, Duet and Waltz. But Waltz is the one in the cave where Sisko and Dukat are trapped and Sisko is injured. And the reason I love this episode is because the struggle between good and evil, if you will, although DS9 is Shades of Grey, but the struggle between Sisko and Dukat and Bajor and Cardassia and the Federation and the Dominion and all of these things are just so well summed up in the interactions between these two characters in this episode.
Yeah, no, that is such a good episode. I think any time that you have those two characters together, it is always really interesting. I think both of those actors play off each other so well. And I think the beauty of that episode, too, is that it's also setting up what we're going to get in the end of the series, right? I mean, that it is going to be between these two characters. So I couldn't agree with you more. It's an excellent choice for the series. And I think it's also one of those things where it does showcase the acting ability of the actors.
Yeah, definitely.
Here. I mean, it really gives them a moment to just kind of, I mean, they just sink their teeth into it.
Yep. Absolutely. Okay, so what's number 8 on your list?
I went with, and this is, I mean, it might be shocking. Some people think this isn't higher, but I went with Way of the Warrior. And of course, you know, we just talked about this duology not too long ago, but obviously it is a pivotal episode, two-part arc of the series. It really does change the course of the series in a mighty way, but it does, I think, it so well. And what it gives us is an introduction to a character and a character study of a character to which we had spent so much time with already. And yet, I think it gives us as much on that character that we had ever had before in 7 years, for the most part. And it's one of those two-parters, which again, just feels like the movie of the week, where you could go in and you could pop that on, you know, your Netflix or from your DVDs, and you just enjoy watching it. And this is another place, too, where there's so much character work that's happening there, those little moments that I just absolutely love, specifically the moment that Jadzia and Worf meet. You know, it's phenomenal, and it's a tiny little moment, but it's one of those things that just really sticks out. So just great stuff. I absolutely love it.
Okay. That's a great pick, and I think probably very high up on many people's lists of episodes, and especially I think that episode did a great job of pulling in more people who had not really gotten into the series yet, and they loved The Next Generation. The reintroduction of the Klingons, Worf coming aboard, and just the tone of the show was excellent. And yeah, as you mentioned, we just talked about that maybe 8 episodes ago here on The Orb, I think. So
yeah,
if anyone wants to really hear our thoughts about that one, just go back to The Orb 130 and 131, where we talk about part 1 and part 2 in separate episodes. So you can get about 2 hours of us talking Way of the Warrior.
So not enough is what you're saying.
Yeah, not enough. I mean, we'll come back to it at some point, I'm sure, and do like a 4-part where we do 2 episodes per half of the show or something. I don't know. All right. So moving on, number 8 on my list is The Sound of Her Voice. And the reason I picked this episode is that, again, for me, DS9 is all about the characters. And as I always say here on this show and others when I bring up DS9, Deep Space Nine is not about the Dominion War so much as it is about how the war affects the lives of our heroes. And this is the next to last episode of season 6. It's the final moment before all hell breaks loose as we barrel to the end of the story, to the end of season 7. And it's so quiet. We talked about this on The Ready Room many years ago, and I believe we titled that episode of The Ready Room, The Quiet Before the Storm, something like that, because that's exactly what it is. And, you know, it has this interesting little twist at the end, but the twist itself is less interesting to me than the conversations that the crew have with Captain Kuzak as they're trying to save her. And again, I just think it's a credit to this show, to Deep Space Nine, that in the midst of this war that's going on, that they can pull back and give us this type of story and then spring us forward. I think it shows this, it highlights the strength of the characters that they built over 6 seasons.
Yeah. Well, and it, you know, we just talked about that back on 129 of The Orb, and, you know, revisiting that episode, I almost put this on my list because of all the reasons that you mentioned. And it's one of those bottle shows which is just so well done. And like you said, this really becomes a character study of where all these characters are and gives us a touch point of what this war has been doing to them. And I can't praise it enough. It really is a phenomenal episode of this show. And so very glad that you ended up putting this one on your list.
So what's number 7 on your list?
Well, for me, it is past tense. And I think what's really interesting about this is the fact that I live in the land of the homeless population. The northwest of the United States and all the way down from Washington to Oregon and even into California, this is a huge problem. And so being there and seeing this is it's so fascinating. And in many ways, too, I think what's most interesting is to see what they get right and what they get wrong in this episode as to how this kind of like happens and the people that are actually in there, why they're in there. So it just really, it's just still so good. And again, I think what makes it fascinating is its relevance still. Mm-hmm. And I will say again, I think they get some things really interestingly right, but they also get a lot wrong. And so they're extrapolating on these ideas, but it's still such a well done episode. And I think it is definitely one of Star Trek's best.
Yeah, I agree. It's not on my list, but it is definitely one of my favorite Deep Space Nine episodes and favorite Star Trek episodes. It's not on my list because I was debating between Past Tense and Homefront and Paradise Lost as stories that have that sort of societal warning. And I felt like going with Homefront and Paradise Lost because of its Dominion War connections. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Past Tense is all you need to do is go online and every day you'll mm-hmm. find people who are mentioning how Deep Space Nine foretold the situation. And of course, as you mentioned, there are things that are playing out a bit differently, but boy, what mm-hmm. a warning. All right. The next one on my list, number 7 on my list, is The Siege of AR-558. And the reason I picked this episode is because of its role in the great development of Nog's character. It's very tragic what happens to him. But what I appreciated about that is that it's that moment where Star Trek stepped up and actually showed true consequences to conflicts like this, because Star Trek up to this point had the tendency to, I think even within DS9, although DS9 is a bit more realistic, but there's this tendency mm-hmm. to portray things as, yes, there it's a war, people are fighting, people get shot, people get injured, but they're always okay in the end because it's the 24th century.
Right.
And, you know, they either die, and if they die, they're not a main character, or mm-hmm. they get injured, but they go to sick bay and everything's fine. You know, that's the tendency of Star Trek. And here they really showed what it would be more like to be in a conflict such as that, and the fact that Nog doesn't quickly recover. And even when he does recover, he's not back to the same person who he was physically or mentally. And that experience truly changes his life. And also creatively, I love the juxtaposition of the visuals of the battle and the music that they're playing at the same time. I thought it was really beautifully done.
Yeah, this is number 4 on my list because I think that this is a phenomenal episode of the series. I think for all the reasons you mentioned, the fact that we are really taking seriously the war, the repercussions of that, what that's like. And we see that play out not just for our Deep Space Nine characters, but for these Starfleet members, right, that have been holding this front. And the way that war has the ability for people who are in it too long to begin to chip away at anyone's morality, anyone's sense of being and purpose and all of those things. I think this is what makes it such a phenomenal episode. And then, of course, like you said, the way it impacts Nog and the way it sets him on a course. So we'll get Only a Paper Moon and episodes like that. It's so well done. And it's one of those things where to which you could see writers setting up dominoes for what was going to come next. And it's just, I just love it. And it's one of those episodes too, that's just so moving. It's emotionally moving every time you see it. And I think that's the hallmark of a really good episode of television, that you can continually watch it again and again and still be moved emotionally by what's happening to the characters. And that's definitely this episode.
Absolutely. Well, what's number 6 on your list?
Well, for me, that is Duet. This is one of those places where Deep Space Nine, in the first season, showed you that it was going to take things much more seriously than we had ever seen Star Trek take things seriously, I think. We were going to deal with the gray much more than we were going to deal with the black and white. And it gave us something so beautiful, which is Kira beginning to see Cardassians in a completely different light. Which, I mean, when you watch, you know, the beginning of this season, you're like, no way that's happening, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
They create an episode that allows you to not only be able to see Kira see the Cardassians in a different light, but for us as the audience to be able to see Cardassians in a different light.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that I don't know if we thought was possible. I mean, Garrick, yes, but this really shines a light on the fact that Cardassians are not necessarily what we think they are. And man, this is another one of those places where the acting is so top notch. Season 1 of Deep Space Nine just does not get enough credit. And this is one of those episodes where it's like, I mean, you can say whatever you want about season 1, but it honestly had legitimately one of the best episodes of the series in its first season.
Yeah.
Which is pretty amazing.
Absolutely. I didn't put this one on my list, although I probably should have, because I probably do consider it to be in that top 10. It's one that I knew we would talk about. I just guessed that probably we were going to talk about this one. So I put Waltz on there again. But yeah, I mean, the acting had to be top notch because the entire episode lives and dies on the delivery of the material, because it's just one on one and it's just phenomenal. And yeah, it's when it's that moment. Maybe it's not the first time, but it is one of those early moments when you're just blown away by Nana Visitor and her acting and this character. And it is, yeah, as you say, it made us look at Cardassians in a different light. And that was a big step actually for Star Trek as well, because typically, you know, aliens, they're there for a specific purpose to share a message with the audience about these other people. And they tend to be monoliths. And here we realized that, no, they're not going to treat Cardassians this way in this show. We're going to get something else. And it was the winds shifted directions with this episode. This is the moment where I think DS9 came alive.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. All right. Well, number 6 on my list, you can probably guess what it is because it relates to number 7. On my list, and that's It's Only a Paper Moon, because it's the follow-up The Siege of AR-558. But I don't choose it purely because it's the follow-up to that to connect them. I did put it in this order so that we can talk to them back-to-back. It's Only a Paper Moon is one of my absolute favorite Star Trek episodes ever, And it's just, I love it for so many reasons. I love Vic Fontaine. I'm always puzzled by people who talk about how dumb it is to have Vic Fontaine on DS9. I've seen people say that that's where the show hit its low point by introducing this character. And I really don't understand that because I think he adds so much to the show. And I mentioned earlier about how the character building on this show is so strong, and you get to the end of season six, and now you're into season seven, and they've built up this roster of characters who aren't main characters, and yet you feel like you know them so well, and you love them so much, and it's to the point where they can have an entire key episode based on two supporting characters. One of them we haven't known for that long in Vic Fontaine. And there's so much meaning in the episode. You don't have to suffer the tragedy that Nog suffered to connect with some of the feelings, because there are things that happen to us in life where, you know, we do feel like mentally trapped or lost, or we need help to find our way back. And I thought that was a wonderful message in this episode, and a great use of Ezri as well in the early part of her time on the show.
This is one again where I could have put it on my list, and you know, I didn't, but like you said, it's just such a great episode. And Deep Space Nine gave us the ability to understand characters beyond Starfleet. And I think to understand the Star Trek universe in a way that no other show had done before, which was really cool. And that's something really special about the show, because it wasn't just about our version of the universe. It was the universe of Star Trek.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that no other show really has been able to do. And in all honesty, I think maybe the only one that comes slightly closer to Deep Space Nine in that is Enterprise, you know, by giving us the Vulcan and the Andorians, and, you know, even by the end of the fourth season, the Tellarites, where we're playing around with more of these characters and the universe itself. And so 100% agree with you, Chris. That is just such a great episode of the series. And, you know, it's a lot of fun, but I think it has universal appeal in the sense that you don't have to have been what Nog's been through to also have been in a place where you wanted to hide from the world.
Right. Yeah.
And it's one of those things where it just shows you it just doesn't work. You can't do that and live a life that you will feel like actually has meaning.
Yeah. Good point. You mentioned playing around with the universe as a whole. Isn't that what Q does?
It's absolutely what he does. And what really, I think, you know, all of season two of Star Trek Picard has kind of been about. So, yeah, that's definitely a great point.
All right. What is number five on your list?
Well, I went with the Circle Trilogy. I think this has to be on the list. It's just so pivotal for the understanding of the Bajorans and the Bajoran story. And it's another one of those places where it gets more and more relevant as we move in time. And I know a lot of people at the beginning did not respond to, again, giving us more of a taste of the universe of Star Trek. But diving into the Bajorans, their religion, and just who they were as a people was fascinating to me, something I continually love going back to. And again, this is like, you know, you put all these episodes together and it's movie of the week quality stuff. So I can't get enough of it.
Also, great hair. Bajoran militia, not a hair out of place. Oh.
So true.
Yeah, I really like the Circle Trilogy. The Circle Trilogy for me is an interesting one because it was, I think it aired at a time when I was out of the country. I was in Russia, I believe. And I didn't get to see it when it first aired, so I had to catch it in reruns, and it took me a little while to see it, and I had heard about it. But over the years, as we've watched it and discussed it on here and on the Ready Room, I've come to really like it. And it, yeah, it was kind of hard, I think, for fans to wrap their head around initially, because it was a somewhat different take on the Star Trek formula, having a three-parter. But it also set the tone for the series. Okay, well, number five on my list is Far Beyond the Stars. Because, again, okay, I think it's a wonderful piece of science fiction, whether it's Star Trek or not. It's always interesting to see the actors out of their makeup. And in this case in particular, you get to see what an incredible group of actors Star Trek Deep Space Nine has. And seeing them as humans working their magic is very special. And the story itself, it was a great story to tie into an important part of our history and ongoing struggle for equality. But again, to me, it doesn't feel like it's wedged in there. You know, it aired during Black History Month at the time it aired. And it doesn't feel like, okay, we have to come up with something that relates to this and let's make it work. It feels like such a natural extension of Sisko and who he is as a person. And in Deep Space Nine fashion of Shades of Grey, they have that conversation between Ben and Cassidy, which I think creates a real engaging storyline for this episode that you wouldn't have gotten maybe on The Next Generation if they tried to do the same thing, because I think it would have been more black and white in terms of the messaging. I think the messaging would have been more straightforward.
Yeah. You know, this is number three on my list. It is a phenomenal episode of the series. I think it is, like you said, the acting in it is wonderful. I do think that what it does so well is to remind us of our past. And in many ways, you know, I think the beauty of the episode as well is that it also kind of helps us see how far we've come, which I think is a beautiful thing. I don't think enough is necessarily made of that in our world to really stop and take a look at where we are and how much better things are, you know, when, especially when you see it like this. Because I think that this episode does a great job portraying the reality of what life was like then.
Right, right.
And the fact that that's not the case anymore is something that should be celebrated. And I think that's what the episode does, right? Is it helps us kind of see where Sisko is and say, wow, look how far we've come.
Right.
And I think, you know, even being able to look ourselves in the mirror and to be able to say it. So, yeah, that's, I had this on my list. I think it is just one of the most incredible episodes of the series. And I think you rightly pinpointed that this is just a place where every single actor is getting an opportunity to sink their teeth into wonderful writing and wonderful work here and just go for it.
Definitely. And that's not to say that the world is perfect now or wonderful and that there aren't problems, but progress has been made. It's a bumpy road. It's up and down. And I think the point,
sure, absolutely,
in this case with Sisko, is that it's not where we are today. It's the journey to get to where he was in the 24th century, where he's in command of the space station. So it shows progress and encourages more, I would say. Okay, so what is number four on your list?
Well, so for me, we talked about that one with the Siege of AR-558.
Okay.
And then, of course, number three for me was Far Beyond the Stars. So, Chris, I guess we get a double dose of what you've got for us.
Okay. So, let's recalibrate here for a second and figure out where we are on my list. This is number four on my list, In the Pale Moonlight. Obvious pick. Many people will cite it as their favorite episode of Star Trek in general, not just DS9. And then there are people who hate the episode because they cannot imagine that a Starfleet captain could do anything like that.
Mm.
But I love the episode because it challenges the Star Trek formula. It challenges who we think the leaders are. Here we've got the leader of the most critical space station at a pivotal moment in a war, a growing conflict. And he feels he has to do something, and he steps out of the bounds that we would normally expect from a captain on the bridge of a shiny starship that can just quickly go wherever it wants. And he knows he's doing something that goes against his training and maybe goes against the ideals that he is sworn to uphold as a Starfleet officer. But he also recognizes that billions of lives are hanging in the balance, and that if he has to sacrifice himself to save others, it's something that he's willing to do.
Yeah, I mean, this episode is number two for me. You know, this is where I think a lot of our list is definitely converging. It's a phenomenal episode, and I think it's phenomenal for Deep Space Nine, because of what I said earlier, which is this is the show which truly, fully embraces the idea that there is gray. And what are you going to do? And how are you going to do it? And can you live with it? I mean, it's, I think, the beauty of the episode too is just the way that Avery Brooks is so sold out in his performance. It's just one of his best performances in the series. And it is because every line on his face is etched with the pain of having to make this decision in the first place. And it's just, I mean, what more can you say?
Yeah, it's a phenomenal piece of science fiction in general, and Star Trek especially. Okay, so yeah, our lists are converging here at the end. So what do you have left? Let's shift back over to you.
I only have number one left.
Okay,
Chris.
Okay. So, well, save your number one then for a moment, and let's talk about my number three, which is The Wire.
Oh,
and
nice.
I chose this one because I think this episode gets lost sometimes, but it's one of my very favorite Garrick episodes. I think it's that moment where you realize what a special character Garrick is. And it's so important to the Garrick-Julian-Bashir relationship. And also, I think Star Trek is dealing with mental issues and this implant that Garrick has and what it's doing to his mind, and it deals with it in a way that hasn't been done as often in Star Trek. Like, it's an important topic. He gets these, you know, sudden migraine headaches, but learning what is inside Garrick's character, I think this episode kind of peels back the curtain and really, really shows us everything that is inside him, how deceptive and devious he can be. And it's also the episode that gives us the wonderful line that they're all true, especially the lies.
Mm-hmm. I think this is a great pick, Chris. And part of that is that this episode is the one, and really feel like this is the one that helps us all kind of think like Garrick was in the show more
than
he actually is. And it's episodes like this because we're truly exploring the character of Garrick and Cardassia through his eyes and who they are and what they're like. And I mean, seriously, this is just legitimately an episode where we learn about him more than we know about some other characters who are mainline on a show for 7 years. It's just phenomenal. And I think it's Andy Robinson is so good as Garrick. And this is the type of episode that reminds you of why people love that character so much. So, I mean, I'm really glad that you picked this one. It's not one that was on my list, but I think this is the thing. It's so hard to pick episodes because there are so many like this that are so good.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that certainly all DS9 fans and a lot of Star Trek fans who haven't really gotten into DS9 know that line. They're all true, especially the lies, but may not remember where it came from, what specific episode, what moment in the story it came from. Okay. Well, here's where we find out if our lists truly converge. You have one left, your number one. I have one left, number two on my list. So tell us the big reveal. What's your number one, Matthew?
It is difficult because there are so many episodes really that could be at number one. But for me, it's The Visitor.
They've converged. Yes. You're here for both of us. The Visitor is the one episode remaining, as I suspected.
Yes. I mean, it's just a beautiful episode. You know, Avery talks about so many times in interviews, and Serac Lofton has talked about this idea as well. The father-son relationship between him and Sisko, between Sisko and Jake, is so pivotal to this series, and it's one to which they took such great care in because of what they felt like was seen as their community's lack of that sometime, and that they really wanted to portray this in a way that nobody had ever seen before on television. And it's beautiful. I mean, and I having conflicted relationship with my own father, it's the type of thing that I think every son wishes their relationship with their father was like this. You know?
Yeah.
And I think that's what gets so many people. Or you had a relationship with your father like this, right? And you still do, maybe. Mm-hmm. And that's what gets you. So it's like it gets everybody, you know? Yeah. And it's, I get kind of like emotional just kind of thinking about how much the episode impacts me every time I watch it. And I think, to me, that's what makes this the best episode of Deep Space Nine, is that no matter when I watch this or how many times I've seen it, I still feel what I felt when I first watched it, and maybe sometimes even more so.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, for me, this is also, as a story, I put What You Leave Behind first on the list because of what it does for the series, but as a story, this is my number one. I think it's the greatest story in DS9, and it's one of just a handful of the greatest stories in Star Trek, and it's wonderful science fiction. Even if you take the Star Trek wrappings off of it, I've loved it since the day it aired. The way it hits me has changed over time, and I think that's where this is a timeless episode. How you react to this episode very much depends on your age, where you are in life. You mentioned relationships with your father, which differ from person to person, and also things that happen to you along the way. So if you watched it when you were 20 and you watch it when you're 40, it's probably going to hit you differently.
Yep.
For me, I still remember, I can even remember where I was sitting doing my notes to prepare for the discussion when we talked about this episode on the Ready Room. And it would have been in 2012. And the week that we were preparing, my father killed himself. And that was just, it was so hard to prepare for that discussion and to get through that discussion. And, you know, it was incredible that the time lined up that way.
Yeah.
And so, as you can imagine, you know, for me these days, it's very difficult to watch this episode.
Absolutely.
And as a father whose son, is now an adult and is setting out on his life now, on his own soon. You know, I have that connection to it as well. You know, sort of flipped around from my perspective as the son to now my perspective as a father. Yeah. It's just a really powerful story.
Yeah, 100% agree with you, Chris. And, you know, I think it is interesting, you know, both of us have we both have issues with dads, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what makes this episode so special for us. And yet I think the beauty of it is it's an episode to which shows what true fathers are meant to be like, you know? And I think that's a beautiful thing. And I think what's great about it is that it's not about the color of their skin or anything like that. It's just about the relationship between a father and a son. That's not seen enough on television anyway. And I think, you know, especially through the late 90s into the 2000s, too many dads on television were just shown as being dopes or idiots or, you know, people you wouldn't look up to anyway. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is something to which it shows that no, dads are important, and they are very important into the in their lives of their child, and their children, and especially the lives of their sons. It has a big impact on how their kids turn out.
Oh yeah.
So
well said.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. This is definitely not only my favorite episode of the series, but I think it is definitely the best episode of the series. So, man, I'm kind of glad that we just had that random thought the other episode, and we're like, we should see what we think are the best, because I think this is turning out to be a lot of fun. And in all honesty, I can't wait to see what people might think on, say, like the Babel Conference or on Twitter. Give us what their top 10 of Deep Space Nine is.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Please share your top 10 with us. Matthew, before we go into the closing, as a quick recap, just to make it easy for everyone to follow, let's just recap our lists. So tell us your list again from 10 to 1.
Yes. Okay. Trials and Tribulations, What You Leave Behind, Way of the Warrior, Past Tense, Duet, The Circle Trilogy, The Siege of AR-558, Far Beyond the Stars, In the Pale Moonlight, and of course, we just talked about number 1, The Visitor. So what were yours, Chris?
Okay, so mine, number 10, was Homefront and Paradise Lost, Together as One Story, then Waltz, The Sound of Her Voice, The Siege of AR-558, It's Only a Paper Moon, Far Beyond the Stars, In the Pale Moonlight, The Wire, The Visitor, and What You Leave Behind. So
nice.
Everyone,
some strong lists.
Yeah, I think it was a great list. And I love the fact that we converged at the end.
Yeah,
it's like two lists great. Coming towards each other in space. And when they converge at a single point, an eruption of time and anti-time. That's a plot to another episode. So everyone, yes, please do share your top 10 lists with us. You can do that on the Babel Conference, as Matthew mentioned. That's our listeners group on Facebook. If you're already a member, you know what to do. But if not, just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right on up. If not, just type the Babel Conference. It is a closed group, so please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. And then we'll put a post for this episode there on the timeline and just in the comments, you know, share your lists with us. We'd love to hear them.
Mm-hmm.
You can also send us email. You can do that by going to our website, trek.fm/contact. Use the form that you find there. Choose to send to a show and choose the orb. And that'll come to Matthew and me by email. And you can find us in social media, Twitter, Instagram, everywhere. Our username is TrekFM. All right. So, Matthew, when you're not making your next top 10 list about your favorite topics, where can people find you?
Well, of course, you could find me on social media under the name MattUrshing02. And so that's Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, Vero, all of those type of places. And then here on the network, we've got the 602 Club, which is the whole other side of our network that's not devoted to Star Trek. And we've got some great bonus shows in that feed as well that you can check out. So I hope you'll do that. There's also Literary Treks, Warp 5, The Artificial Tango, and Saddle Up. And so Literary Treks, about the books and the comics of Star Trek. Warp 5, Chris, you and I are walking through a Star Trek Enterprise, all the episodes as we celebrate 20 years of that show. We're going to be back to that soon. And then, of course, Artificial Tango, we're almost done with season 2 of Star Trek Picard, which is fun, but... well, we've saddled up with Strange New Worlds as that show is just about to land. And so we have got so much going on together here on the network. So I hope people will check that out. And then over on the Nerd Party Network, I've got a finished show called Owlposts I did with Drea Kaufman. We talked about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, one chapter at a time. And then John Mills and I are on aggressive negotiations talking Star Wars. But Chris, when people aren't trying to see, you know, maybe what you've got behind door number 2, where can people find you?
Now I'm just picturing if Quark had a Price is Right program in the Holo Suite.
Yes. Yes.
All right. When I'm not doing that, you can find me elsewhere on the network. As you mentioned, the shows we do together, Enterprise on Warp 5, Picard on the Artificial Tango, and of course, saddling up with you, getting ready to talk some Strange New Worlds. You can also find me on The Ready Room, which I mentioned a few times today. Larry Nemechek and I do that show together from time to time these days. And years ago, some of the discussions we mentioned in today's episode were more panel discussions, which used to be the format of The Ready Room. So you can find me on hundreds of episodes of that show, as well as many other things there in the back catalog. And if you'd like to chat with me about anything, you can find me in social media. My username is C. Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. That's my username everywhere, although Twitter is where I'm most active. And I'd love to chat with you about DS9, Star Trek overall, anything like that. Be great to catch up there on Twitter. Now, if you would like to help us keep the orb and Saddle Up and all these other shows and the 602 Club side of the network going, we could definitely use your help. If you'd like to find out how to become involved in the network and support the network, please go to patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to find out how, become an associate producer, get involved in other ways, take part in discussions on roundtables. And we could really use your help. And we thank everyone who is supporting us there right now. We would not be here without you. All right, Matthew, first I'm going to look through those boxes of memorabilia you have, because that's a new approach to fandom that I hadn't considered before. I love that idea. And maybe while I'm doing that, I'll find a new orb we can open up.
Well, Chris, I think that sounds like a great idea, so don't get lost in the boxes. But thank you, everyone, for joining us, and we shall see you next time as we gaze into the orb.